Welcome, everybody, back to another edition of the DVD Marquee. Jeff Rosado back here with you after a unintentional sabbatical, but we're here, we're back, and we're going to make it worth your while. But first of all, let me introduce you to my comrade in moviedom, Stan Williams.
Hi there, good to be here.
Yeah, good to have you back, Stan. And we've got a really good show today. We got four movies today, including two that haven't been released as of the taping of this show. Nacho Libre and Mission Impossible 3. And we're also going to talk about The Fast and the Furious, Tokyo Drift, and A Prairie Home Companion. But right now, we start off with Jack Black's the latest comedy, Nacho Libre.
Listen to me! Today, I have the chance of a lifetime. But first, I need a man!
Get off me!
Don't you see? Your skills plus my skills in the ring. Tag team!
Oh, you're crazy!
Aren't you tired of getting dirt kicked in your face? I am! Don't you want a little taste of the glory? See what it tastes like?
No!
If we win, we get 200 pesos!
Okay, we have a Mexican monk named Ignacio, played by Mr. Black, who's out to win the heart of a nun by becoming a wrestler. That's pretty much the plot in a nutshell, right?
Wrestler. That's how we pronounce wrestler in the South.
That's right.
If you're wondering.
Wrestling. W-R-A-S-S-L-M or something like that. Anyway, but yeah. You know, this movie got so much bad press, was such a disappointment critically, that I kind of winced at the prospect of watching it. But doggone it, the critics missed the point. I really enjoyed this movie. I think it was marketed all wrong, and it just, maybe people were expecting something different, but I found it very charming and entertaining.
I feel exactly the same way. I think a lot of it, I think, was my expectations. Like you said, my expectations going in. I knew people who had seen it and hated it, and I was expecting, you know, it to be a pretty dreary hour and a half, but I don't know, there's just a goofy charm to this thing that I really liked a lot. I wouldn't say I was laughing out loud throughout the whole thing, but it's charming. And I think that's the word for it. And I think, you know, this is from Jared Hess, the director of Napoleon Dynamite. And
right.
I think if you like the style of Napoleon Dynamite, that you'll like this movie. And I really like that style. He has this sort of, just kind of this deadpan style that I really like.
It's very offbeat, but in a very appealing way. I liked the way it was shot and the way it was staged, written. It's a good story, and, you know, it's a kids' movie. I mean, I know it was produced by Nickelodeon, but, you know, sometimes when you see the word Nickelodeon by a movie, you think it's going to be, it's kind of just a little too, you know, too much for us grown-ups. But I think it's the kind of movie that kids and adults can appreciate.
I do, too. It's a one-joke premise, and
right.
I think I was afraid that, you know, it's Jack Black, Jack Black as, you know, a really out-of-shape wrestler, as we say down here, and I was afraid that was going to be the entire joke of the movie. And in a way it is, but in a way it didn't get as old as I thought it would.
And, you know, everything from where he meets up with this young Mexican hoodlum to, you know, falling in love with the nun and wanting to kind of, you know, create attention by, you know, doing what he does. And it's just, it's well told. I can't really put my finger on it. It's a very simplistic tale, but just, you know.
I think what it is that they committed to it. You know what I mean?
Right.
They had an idea and they really committed to it.
And I like the fact that he took the wrestling seriously. I mean, he started out, you know, it was a good way to make money, and then, you know, the first few matches are just nothing to write home about, but, you know, he doesn't want to lose, you know. I mean, he gets paid for, you know, they get paid for losing in this tag team setup, but, you know, he wants to do better, mm-hmm. And I kind of liked the fact of how it, you know, played into the orphanage, wanting to raise money for the kids, get a nice bus for them so they can do more activities and stuff, and it was a very sweet film, as well as being charming and well put together.
It really is. I agree. What did you think of the DVD?
Well, the DVD is pretty jam-packed with features, and I think my favorite feature was the commentary, which is basically mm-hmm. dinner and a movie with Jack Black, Jared Hess, and Mike White. And, you know, either, you know, they're putting us on, you know, with these crunching sounds or something, or they were actually really eating at a real restaurant, which is kind of cool. I think every movie commentary should be supplemented with a good meal.
I don't know about that, but I think in this case it worked. It's like, you know,
I mean, I myself had a nice ham and cheese sandwich and some chili, you know, while enjoying this. So yeah, and it really enhanced my
it gives you that feeling of, you know, three guys sitting around on the couch, you know, drinking beers and talking about movies, and I like that. And for this sort of movie, I think that it goes really well with this sort of movie.
Right. You've also got a few deleted scenes, which really were cut for time. Nothing really special.
Although I did really like, there's one deleted scene that goes on for like 7 minutes with Peter Stormare. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. From the Big Lebowski.
Yeah, he shows up in the final version of the movie for like, what, 2 minutes at the most.
Right.
And there's a little bit more that kind of explains his character that I sort of wish they had kept in there, because I really like the whole sequence.
Got a pretty typical photo gallery, nice behind-the-scenes shots. I can say that I did like the fact that they were not posed or publicity or anything like that. So that was fun. I enjoyed that. You've got 5 behind-the-scenes featurettes, a trio of trailers, especially the one that I liked the best was the action figure that was partially subtitled.
Yeah, that was very good.
It's very well done. Jack sings. Anybody who has seen all of Jack Black's movies knows that he has kind of he's got a pretty decent voice, and he's also in Tenacious D, you know, which has a movie coming out, The Pick of Destiny or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He actually has a couple of neat little musical moments in this movie that are kind of played out in full. So I think folks would get a big kick out of that.
I did like that too. I mean, it's not like a huge thing. It's more like a little fly on the wall thing.
Yeah.
I did like that. It does kind of give you a little bit of insight into the process where, you know, they're doing, you know, well, there's this lyric here and there's this lyric here. And you actually see them collaborating. And,
right.
And I like that.
So, folks, you know, ignore the critical consensus. I mean, this is and by the way, speaking of the soundtrack, the music, there's going to be a soundtrack album coming out the day that the DVD is released. And I'm really happy about that because I thought this was the best sounding score and, you know, well-chosen songs for any movie that I've seen this year.
I was really surprised how good this movie looked and how good it sounded.
Yes, it did. I'm glad you mentioned that because the 5.1 on this is just fantastic. I mean, it just fills out the whole room, and it's got a lot of pizzazz to it. So, yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out. To sum it all up, this is a terrific movie. Very charming. Something you can watch with the kids. There's not a lot of cussing in it, you know. I mean, it's kind of refreshing to see something
just
like this.
There's a lot of wrestling.
But there's a lot of wrestling, so keep that in mind. But do check it out.
Hello, everybody, on a Saturday night. Welcome to a live broadcast of A Prairie Home Companion, coming to you from WLT, your friendly neighbor station.
You have a nice show here, Mr. Noir.
Thanks, we like it.
Do you believe in the fullness of time and the spirit? Most people don't, you know. It would be good, Mr. Noir, if you would open your heart to the fullness of time and the spirit, which upholds and sustains us all through this world. Amen.
Whatever you say.
And now come with me, my friends, as we travel to the fictional town of Lake Wobegon for Robert Altman's A Prairie Home Companion, based on the much-beloved, very entertaining public radio program. And it's almost like a larger-than-life recreation of the radio show and the wacky goings on behind the scenes as the show takes to the air for one last time. Stan, I don't know if you're familiar with the program. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love this movie. It's just a typical Robert Altman ensemble extravaganza. What do you think?
I think you're exactly right. I am familiar with the program. I haven't listened to it a whole lot, but I do like it. I love the whole idea of it. I love, you know, everything that show represents, because, you know, we really don't have a whole lot of stuff like that
anymore.
And that's what this movie is. I mean, this movie is pretty much a movie version of the show. That's exactly what you get.
Right.
I think if you like the show, you'll like the movie. And honestly, I don't think there's a whole lot to review there.
There isn't, you know, but we can talk about some great performances. I mean, one of the things that Altman's been known for is being able to put together these great cast, mm-hmm. you know, from like MASH, Nashville, Gosford Park, The Player. Another great example here. He doesn't reinvent the wheel, but my God, I mean, some of the performances he gets out of these people, Meryl Streep and Lily Tomlin as the Johnson sisters, mm-hmm. you know, their repartee is almost like a Carter family-ish in a way. You know, I don't know if that's what they were going for, but just, you know, it's nice to hear that backstage give and take before they go out and hit the air. And miracle of miracles, Lindsay Lohan didn't get on my nerves. I mean, she's terrific, too, as the younger daughter of Meryl Streep's character, Yolanda's daughter. Uh-huh. She was very good, you know, kind of a, you know, typical teen, you know, thinking, you know, about death a lot and writing poetries about dying and all that, and actually has a pretty decent singing voice.
Did you think that the and don't get me wrong, I liked Kevin Kline in this movie a lot.
Right.
I thought actually as I was watching it, I was thinking, you know, Kevin Kline should be playing the Pink Panther.
Yeah.
But, and I mean, like I said, I really liked him a lot, but didn't it seem just his the whole part with him seemed just a little weird, just a little out of left field?
It was, you know, I think it's some of his best work. I mean, it's just, it's a little out there, like you said, but I enjoyed him always, you know, roaming around backstage,
oh, yeah.
you know,
oh,
looking
yeah.
for trouble.
I love the, you know, the sort of physical comedy he does. But another thing, I thought the Virginia Madsen character
oh, yeah.
as the angel, I thought that kind of bordered on the pretentious just a little bit. I think that didn't quite work.
But I don't know. I feel differently about that. I like the fact that, you know, there was a spiritual presence watching over everybody.
I like the idea, but there was just something about the execution of it that just seemed yeah. a little high school play to me, just a little off. It's a minor criticism.
Right. I will tell you, I think one thing that we can agree on: Woody Harrelson and John C. Reilly as Dusty and Lefty.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sequence. Let's take a little listen to a tune from the movie called Bad Jokes.
You got one, Dusty?
I got one, Lefty.
Let's hear it.
When God created woman, he gave her not two breasts, but three. When the middle one got in the way, God performed surgery. The woman stood before God with the middle breast in hand, said, what do we do with the useless boob? And God created man.
Bad jokes, Lord, I love.
The chemistry between them is just, you know, it makes you want to go out and get the soundtrack album. Not just that song, but also the song that Meryl Streep and Lily Tomlin did about Mothers, I think it was. Oh, God, just to talk about, you know, wanting to, you know,
well, getting
get
back
a hanky out and call your mama. I mean,
getting back to John C. Reilly and Woody Harrelson, I kind of wish I could listen to those guys on the radio every week.
Yeah. It would be, I'd definitely tune in. I'll put it that way. So what'd you think about the extra features and stuff?
There's not a whole lot here, but I think what they put on is actually pretty fitting. You get a little bit of the history of the show, some interviews with GK, as he's called.
Right. Maybe
a little history
who's
of the
coming
show.
To our town the week of this taping, by the way.
I did not know that. You get a commentary of Robert Altman and Kevin Kline. Fairly entertaining, I thought. Kevin Kline is just funny to me. So.
Right.
And it's Robert friggin' Altman, so...
Exactly. I mean, you know, if you want to listen to somebody that has been through the ringer and knows what filmmaking is all about...
Absolutely.
Can't recommend a commentary by Robert Altman any higher. One thing that we need to mention for folks that really enjoyed the music... The musical sequences in the final cut of the film were kind of abbreviated a bit. You know, we cut back and forth between music and plot line. Here on the DVD, you get pretty much full performances of all the songs, which is really neat, and also a plug for the soundtrack, which I highly recommend.
Especially if you're a fan of the show, I think you'll like the movie.
Same here. Late Wobegon lives on the big screen, and I can't believe this movie didn't do a lot of business given the popularity of the show, but I just have a feeling it's going to have a long shelf life on DVD.
Why don't you nice boys let your cars do the talking?
I only race for pink slips.
This car goes for 80 grand. What would I do with a broken-ass piece of shit like that?
How about me? Winner gets me.
Our next movie completes a trilogy of sorts. It's the fastest and the furiousest, Tokyo Drift. And it's a movie about driving cars sideways. And that's it.
That's all you've got to say, huh?
That's the movie.
Okay. That's pretty much it. Well, I think there's a little bit more. We've got some romance. We've got Lucas Black.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's romance.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's, you know,
this movie makes the Cannonball Run movies look like a Tennessee Williams play in terms of plot.
So I guess off the top here, you're saying that you didn't really care for it.
I'm saying that it's a movie about driving cars sideways for 1 hour and 45 minutes. Actually, they don't even drive the cars sideways for 1 hour and 45 minutes. There's a lot of Lucas Black going, "You teach me how to drift."
You know, I hate to admit it, I haven't seen the first here. I mean, you know, they made a ton of money.
Well, then you must have been lost.
I mean, I just didn't make it to the theater. I mean, I've got friends who have copies of them.
And you know they couldn't live up to the books.
You know, they... We're not going to cut any of this out. I find myself at the mercy of the court here. You know, I knew what I was getting myself into, but doggone if I did not like this movie. I mean, it's just simply one of those, you know, you get what you come for, and it's fun. I mean, taking Lucas Black, who, you know, is from our neck of the woods, you know, Sling Blade and all that, talented kid, and I just can't believe how much he's grown in about the last 10 years. I mean, don't look at me like that. But just
our little boy's growing up.
Yeah, I know. But but the thing that I find amazing is that he doesn't look like a high school student anymore. I mean, you know, he looks a little too old as, you know, half the cast, you know.
Well, that's par for the course. The cast of Grease looked 40.
I just don't know what it is, Stan. I enjoyed the scenery. Car chases were very well executed, and it's colorful, and, you know, there's no logic or rhyme or reason to it, but just I had fun with it.
Did you like the scene where the cars were sliding sideways?
Yeah, I liked all 12 of them.
Don't get me wrong. I knew, you know, going in exactly what this movie was going to be. And I like Lucas Black, too. I mean, you can't not like him. The guy does have some screen presence. But I swear the skin on my... never mind. That was a different movie.
That would be Body Double.
Yeah. I swear every time he would open his mouth, I just cringed. "You teach me how to drift." There's a scene. I knew I was in trouble. There's a scene early on where there's a big car chase, and his car is flipping over, and they make this big deal. There's a special effects shot, and the director.
I know what you're talking about.
The director even talks about this in the commentary of a bottle of Tabasco sauce flying across through the car as it's tumbling over. The director, apparently this was a special effect that took a long time to do. And it's just the weirdest damn thing, because I was like, it's not really funny, but...
It's Tabasco sauce flying through a car. The things that, you know, box office ticket money is paying for, yeah. Anyway, let's get to the extras, because I don't think we're going to be able to get through this. You know, we'll probably laugh for 10 minutes here. We've got a few deleted scenes. About the only one that I thought that would have worked in the context of the movie, you know, would have been the one where he's tracking down Neela, the lovely female lead of the movie, played by Nathalie Kelly. Nathalie Kelly. Anyway, Nath, I'm going to call you Nath for short, but she plays Neela. Neela, okay, I got it right now.
Natalie.
Yeah, Natalie, yeah. Anyway, yeah, she's nice to look at. If I were only 20 years younger. But
You know what? Kate Beckinsale's lovely to look at. Let's just, to borrow a line from Ellen DeGeneres,
right?
Let's just put a picture of her down in the bottom of the screen for the whole movie.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I could have watched her for 2 hours, but just a handful of deleted scenes that were rightly left out. Tricked out to drift, you find out... Got me
You get a lot of bonus features where they talk about driving cars sideways.
Yeah, driving cars sideways.
Many, many times.
Many, many times. Drifting school, you got the actors out on the racetrack learning how to master that drift and technique. Cast cam, the behind-the-scenes wackiness of the shoot. Looks like everybody had a lot of fun making the movie. Tricked out to drift. I thought I'd say it straight for once. Car nuts will love this. You got the automobile coordinator of the movie talking about coming up with these really cool cars. And they were really, really, you know, I'm not really a car freak, but, you know, some of the, you know, the colors and the designs of the cars were just simply fantastic.
I do agree. I mean, the movie does have a good look to it. Yeah. There's a vibrancy to it. The colors, the many, many scenes of the cars sliding sideways are shot well. I will give it that.
Oh, definitely. You know, this is going to go into my guilty pleasure file. I don't know about you, but I had a good time with it, and it makes me want to go see the first two, which I've heard great things about. This one was not critically hailed, but I found it to be kind of a surprise, and I definitely enjoyed it.
If someone were to come up to me and say, Stan, can you recommend a movie about cars driving sideways? I would say this is in the top three.
Yep. The Fast and the Furious, Tokyo Drift. Drive on.
Ethan, where's the rabbit's foot?
What I gave you.
I'm going to count to 10. You're going to tell me where the rabbit's foot is, or she dies. One.
If there was a misunderstanding, I will fix it. I can get it. Whatever you want.
Two.
Listen. Talk to me. We can talk. Like gentlemen.
Three.
I know where the rabbit's foot is.
Four.
The rabbit's foot's in Paris. You want to know where in Paris? Then let her go. Because you will
it's
never.
Not in Paris. Five.
But you kill her, you do this, you get nothing. Three. Are you listening to me? The only way you're gonna get what you want is for you to. No, no, no. You think I'm playing? You think I'm playing? You don't think I'll do it? Where is it? Where the hell is it?
Look at me.
Where the hell is it?
Okay, Stan, the first really big movie blockbuster of 2006 is finally, oh, it just took 5 months, is on DVD. And it's a movie that a lot of people told me good things about. Wanted to go see it theatrically, but for some reason I just did not make it. And I'm thinking, well, maybe it's not as great as everybody thought it was. You know, I started thinking about the Tom Cruise backlash. But after seeing this movie, I got to tell you, it's the best movie, the best action movie I've seen since Terminator 2.
Wow, that's some pretty big praise.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we both... we've seen all three of them. The first two had some great action sequences, set sequences or whatever, set pieces, whatever you want to call them. But there was just something about the plot. I mean, even John Woo couldn't work his magic on it. I mean, it just seemed more like flash instead of substance. Nothing like the TV show that I remember. And, you know, you want to reinvent things for a modern day audience, but just it didn't have the feel of the team, you know, the Mission Impossible teamwork and all that. And there was no real head of IFM or whatever you call it. And in this one, Mission Impossible 3, J.J. Abrams, God bless him, he got it all right. This is just one great movie from start to finish.
I don't think I'm as crazy about it as you are. I think it's a solid movie. I think it's definitely the best of the three. It's a very well done movie. But to kind of go over some of the points you were talking about, the problem that I've always had with this series, and I don't want to jump on the Tom Cruise, make fun of Tom Cruise bandwagon,
right.
But this is something I've always had a problem with. In the TV show, you have such an iconic character like Jim Phelps.
Exactly.
You know who they I won't spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen the movies, but they pretty much get rid of in the first one.
And
they replace him with this character named Ethan Hunt, which to me has always been the problem, and even to a certain extent, I think, in this movie, is the character of Ethan Hunt. There is no there. Think about it. I don't think...
Oh, definitely in the first two movies, but I thought, you know, this time, you know, they gave him a fiancé, and they gave him a bit of a home life, and there's more interplay between the team. I mean, there's more of a person there. Of course, you know, we don't get a full-fledged portrait, but, you know, you don't really want a full-fledged portrait of a human being in the midst of an action movie.
There's a falseness to it, though, to me, and And again, I swear I'm not just jumping on the bash Tom Cruise bandwagon. I like the guy. I like his enthusiasm.
Right.
I think he's got talent.
And this is by far his best performance out of all three movies.
But this character, it's like, okay, you're giving him a wife. Okay. It's such a bland character. Think of it this way. When you're seeing a movie like this, what kid, name one kid you know that wants to grow up and be like Ethan Hunt?
Me, because I'd like to get married to Michelle Monaghan. Yeah, I would. Hubba hubba.
But I
know where you're coming from.
There's something about the character, and it is kind of hard, I think, in a way, to separate the character from Cruise in a weird way,
mm-hmm.
because there's something in this character. It's kind of like, you know, when you go to somebody's house, and their house is really, really clean,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, well, this is a nice looking house, but does anybody live here? You know, it doesn't look lived in.
Yeah.
This character is not a lived in flesh and blood character. He's like a statue. And that's sort of the way they portray him as this sort of, you know, the perfect physique, capable of all these things. But there's something hollow there. And for me, don't get me wrong, I think it's a very well done movie. For me, that's what keeps it from really going that one extra step.
I think you have some valid points there, Stan, but at the same time, you're not looking for, you know, a lot of flesh and blood in a movie like this, but I will say that I felt more of an emotional connection to his character, because there's a lot of stuff that happens in this movie that we cannot give away, because, you know, it'll just ruin it, but I felt some real, there were a couple of thrill throat tightening moments for me. I felt real emotion for him and, you know, his wanting to have more of a family life. I admired that aspect of the plot tremendously, and I thought it was extremely well written. We both love J.J. Abrams' style on Lost, Alias. You know, the guy knows how to write. I mean, it's
absolutely.
And it just seems like, you know, this one had more. Of course, you got all the action, and we got to talk about Philip Seymour Hoffman here in just a second, but just, I, you know, respectfully disagree. I thought that, you know, Cruise's character was practically, you know, nothing was there in the first two. Like I said, all flash and no substance. It was definitely empty in the first two movies, but here, I think you have a real human being, you know, somebody that you can care for and root for. In other words, this should have been the first Mission Impossible movie.
I agree with that point. Again, to me,
and I think it's really a shame that, again, you know, Summer Redstone, I think that's his name, you know, is, you know, ditching him all of a sudden here, when I think the franchise really has gotten a good kicking the pants here. I really think it's a shame that they're talking about trying to go with another actor or whatever, but, you know, we'll just see how that progresses in times to come. And I also think it's kind of sad that this is the least grossing the least successful, I think, movie of all three films, because it's by far the best.
Now, you made a point. You said this was the best action movie you've seen since Terminator 2.
Right.
And I understand what you're saying about the characters in these types of movies. Believe me, I understand what you're saying. But look at it. The relationships in Terminator 2, the relationship between the kid and the Terminator.
Right.
There was a, yes, the movie is cartoony, but there is a flesh and blood. There is something flesh and blood about those characters. Indiana Jones, there's character there.
Right.
There is a person who is lived in. You know, if I say to you Indiana Jones, you have an idea of quality.
Yeah,
When I say Ethan Hunt to you, what does that bring to mind?
It brings to
mind after three movies.
Tom Cruise with a really good haircut.
And that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, but in this movie, it seems like you've got the beginnings of a personality here and a character whom we're probably not going to get to know much about with the situation between Cruise and Paramount at the moment. But let's go ahead and get back into talking about the rest of the film. Great stunt work and location photography. Philip Seymour Hoffman, my gosh, you know, if they had an Oscar for action movies, this guy would definitely be up there, or for the bad guy of the year.
Yeah, I did like that they do finally have the sense enough to bring in the team aspect.
Yeah,
because that's the whole point of it being Mission Impossible. The whole point is to have a team, and that always bugged me, especially about the second one.
Yeah, and you've got some. I always thought that Ben Rhames has been terrific in these movies. The chemistry between him and Cruise is just simply fantastic. We've got Maggie Q trained by none other than Jackie Chan, who I think is going to have a terrific career in films.
Any relation to Stacy Q?
Don't think so.
Okay,
quick 80s flashback there. And Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, Elvis from the TV miniseries and also from that terrific Woody Allen movie. Have you seen Match Point yet?
No, I haven't.
Terrific movie. He's fantastic in that. And he's really good here. You know, he's kind of like a comic relief every so often. Mm-hmm.
And one thing I really did love about this movie was that there was not one single scene of a car sliding sideways.
They slid every other which way, I'll put it that way. Great stunt work in this, and just, you know, there's so much more I want to talk about, but just I don't want to spoil it because it's so, Billy Crudup and Lawrence Fishburne. I did not know that Lawrence Fishburne was in this movie, yet another thing that was lacking in the previous two movies. No really strong voice of reason. He was terrific in this movie, and Billy Crudup was equally as good, plays a very pivotal role. And I keep thinking of people, Carrie Russell from Felicity, mm-hmm. very, very impressive. Although she's not in the movie for very long, I was really impressed with her performance. Let's talk about this two-disc edition, which comes out on Monday, October 30th. What'd you think about the commentary?
Very entertaining.
It was entertaining, and as much as Cruise has gotten, you know, lambasted for couch jumping and all that, the guy knows filmmaking. He's got an enthusiasm for it. J.J. Abrams, the same way. They start off kind of calm, laid back, professional, and as the movie goes on, it's like, oh, I like that shot. I like that shot. You know, and just it's infectious. You know, it's one of the most fun commentaries I've ever sat through.
I like that because I think having him sit there with J.J. Abrams, you know, there is a comfort there, obviously, between them that
right.
I think, I don't know, in a weird way, almost makes Cruise seem a little more human.
Yeah, definitely, and I think people will get a refreshing kick out of it. I've always been a Tom Cruise fan. I think he's been extremely misunderstood. I think he's been kind of dumb in terms of knowing what to say and when. But anyway, enough about that. I'm sure his next publicist will take care of that. The second disc is just jam-packed with stuff. You've got inside the action unit, visualizing the mission, inside the IMF, in which you get a real good portrait of all the actors. It's nearly about a half hour long. I was really impressed with that. Any of the others that you can comment on that you'd like to say?
Nothing that really
about?
Leaps to mind. I do want to say, I mean, I would ultimately give the movie a positive review. I think it's good. I had an odd reaction to it, though, when I saw it. It just kind of washed over me in some sort of weird, disconnected sort of way as I'm sitting there and almost in a scientific manner going, this is very well done, and yet on another level feeling kind of disconnected from it. I think it is a fairly good action movie as a DVD, and with all the features that come on the DVD, I would actually highly recommend it.
Yes, I think it's not only one of the best movies of the year, I think it's one of the best DVDs of the year. This is a real grand slam for Paramount. I can picture this under a lot of Christmas trees this year, I'll put it that way. So, highly recommended by both Stan and myself, Mission Impossible 3. Your mission is to accept it into your DVD collection. Good luck, Jim. And that puts the lid on the top, or the top on the lid, or something like that, to another DVD marquee, which is just drifted away, I must say.
Drifted.
Drifted.
And from wrestling to drifting.
Wrestling to drifting.
I'm a picking.
And I'm a grinning. Well, Stan, a pretty enjoyable show here. It seems like we were kind of in sync on every movie today.
Pretty much. I think we need more really bad movies to review.
No, they've actually been really good. But out of the four that we've talked about today, which one gets your top pick?
In terms of the overall DVD, probably Mission Impossible 3. Mm-hmm. Although, I gotta say, I was really surprised by Nacho Libre.
So was I. I definitely recommend renting that one for those who may be unsure. But if you buy it, I guarantee you're going to love it and go back to it again and again. I think it's got the makings of a cult movie, to be honest with you.
I think it does, too.
And also, A Prairie Home Companion, for folks that love the show, it's a no-brainer. But even if you're not into NPR or GK, it's definitely worth picking up if you want to see movie making at its best. And it's also got some terrific music in it as well. Anyway, Stan, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And folks, we will see. Oh, by the way, if you want to write us, if you have any comments about the show, we've got a brand new email address. It is thedvdmarquee@gmail.com. And let us know what you think about the show, what needs to be improved, what doesn't need to be improved, or just any kind of comment you have. Just give us a shout out at, once again, thedvdmarquee@gmail.com. Thanks to Home Theater Forum, iCraveDVD.com, and you for listening. Jeff Rosato for Stan Williams. We'll see you next time.
You teach me how to drift.